For this month's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus album retrospective, we're going to tell you all about one of the great guitar-driven soundtracks of all time. 1981's heavy metal set a new standard for featuring the best rock acts of the day, their music, as a sort of soundscape to a movie with a lot of boobs. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. It is the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Yes, and we are talking about the soundtrack to the movie Heavy Metal. Second podcast of every month is our album retrospective, and that's what we're doing. We've been going through, and either it's usually Keith and Lily that have kind of been picking a lot of them, and this was one that I think was pretty much my idea, so you just have to put up with it. So we're going to get into that here in a couple of minutes. Let's do a little bit of business. First of all, we have the Full Power Trio together. I love this. I love when all three of us are together. We've got Keith the Hawk Hawkins from down there in New Orleans. What's going on, Keith? You all right, bro?
Yeah, man. We're living the dream.
Or is the dream living you?
One day at a time. Sweet Jesus.
Sweet Jesus. You and Bonnie Franklin. did you get that reference?
It's just one day at a time, wasn't she?
Yeah. Well, there you are. Okay. And then...
hard shit already, man.
And we also have Lily von Stupp from Blazing Saddle. I'm sorry. Lily V6 from Rock Grade Radio.
So close. We have the same mindset, so why not?
I'm going to turn... I want you to reduce the sheriff of Rock Ridge. The sheriff is... near.
Oh my god.
Anyways, guys, so we got the whole band back together. I'm really excited for it. Last week was a lot of fun. Stone Senate, really good sort of southern rock band, was in the studio with us. That will be out up on Spotify and iTunes and all the places, so you can check with her. Their manager emailed me. They said, where can we get it? So that's going to be coming up. That'll be uploaded in the next day or two, so you guys can check that out, because it was apparently wildly popular. Shout out to Wolf's Customs. No sense getting on stage. And you will be getting on stage soon, at least in Texas, Florida, some of these places. What are you doing, Keith?
I'm going to get on stage Saturday.
Louisiana, Mississippi, some places.
Louisiana's like that. It's open for business except for the city I live in, but outside the city.
Well, what are you inviting me down there for? If we're not gonna be able to go out, what are we gonna do?
Well, that's not for a minute. Maybe things will change.
We can do whatever we want. It's America.
It's America. Anyways, so Wolf's Customs. You're gonna get on stage. You're gonna be playing, guys. Things are opening up. You want to make sure that you're on stage with a really badass looking instrument. Bass, guitar. I bet he could. You remember those crazy things from the 80s, Keith? That look, you know, the keyboard player would stand up and play. You
the
know
keytar.
What I mean? Yeah, what was it called?
The keytar.
Keytar. So he could even.
Yeah, I was in a band when a guy played one of those.
There you are. So you could. He could even customize your keytar so you just look. Because, like, playing a keytar is about the dumbest looking thing there is. But if Chris Thunder Wolf Dodson at Wolf Customs does a custom paint job on it, you're automatically going to be cool. So definitely get a hold of them. Go to wolfscustoms.online, check them out. And, of course, our wonderful folks at Rock Rage Radio. Love those guys. They have really opened up a whole new audience to us. So thank you, guys. We salute you. And go to lulombardimusic.com to get more information on what we got going on here. We have an a private Facebook group, Lou Lombardi's Inner Circle, where you get all kind of cool stuff. There's free downloads and all kind of fun stuff. You can check that out at lulombardimusic.com. All right. So, heavy metal.
Which happens to be one of your favorite films.
One of my favorite movies. A lot, mainly because of nostalgia. I mean, you know, Keith is a kind of a film buff. And I'm sure we could all agree that, no, this is not like a great, this isn't like The Godfather or Lawrence of Arabia.
Oscar worthy.
Yeah, it's not like that. But it is a super fun movie from, you know, and for me, it's a nostalgia thing. It's, you know, so.
I love that it screams 80s.
It does. It has a lot of great music from that, a lot of great artists from that era, and some who probably should have been a little bit bigger but didn't quite get there.
Yeah, they didn't reach that.
They didn't quite get there.
It's like, oh,
just out of reach. And there's an eagle on the album doing a solo song that was this eagle's only hit as a solo artist. So there's some really cool little things about the soundtrack. So it's going to be fun to talk about. So, Lily, why don't we start and give us a kind of like background on what, because it is an old movie. It's from 1981. And there may be people going, scratching their heads, younger folks going, scratching their heads going like, I don't even know what this thing is. What are you talking about? Go ahead.
Well, 1981, I was born the very last day, so it came out before me even. So there's that.
It's older than Lily.
This is one of, like Lou said, we do our album choice every month, and this is a little different because this isn't just based on one artist, this is several artists, so I like that whole idea of it. But was released in 1981 on LP, but for legal reasons was not released on CD until 1995 because of all the copyright for some reason. Peaked at number 12. The movie's theme song Heavy Metal Taking a Ride was sung by Don Felder.
Felder, for those guys who know, Don Felder is no longer an Eagle, but he was an Eagle.
Yes,
that's Fingers. They call him Fingers. Call him Fingers.
Finger Felder.
The legal difficulties surrounding the use of some songs in the movie delayed its release to home video. The production company's use of some songs was limited solely to the theatrical release, and soundtrack did not include home video releases. And it was not until 1996 that there was an official home video release on VHS when Kevin Eastman, who had bought the publishing rights to Heavy Metal Magazine in 1992 and previously contributed to the magazine, reached a settlement with the music copyright holders. So this movie took so much to come out. And what's interesting about it is the soundtrack does not go in the order of the songs on the movie. So they're not the same. Like, some soundtracks will go from scene to scene to scene. This one is all over the place. So
it's just how they did. For those of you who aren't familiar, Heavy Metal was a comic, what do you call it, comic graphic novel
series magazine
that had these sort of sci-fi fantasy stories that were for adults. So there was violence, sex, nudity.
Drugs,
things like that. So it was for grown-ups. And so just a little bit of a background there. And the movie itself is an anthology film. It's a fantasy, sci-fi, horror, whatever you want to call it, comedy. It is very, very funny. So if you're one of the things that blew my mind when I saw the movie was I wasn't expecting it to be funny. And it's funny as all get out. There's a lot of, and there's got some great voice performances in it. Some of our most beloved actors from that era, John Candy, Harold Ramis.
Yeah, that's one of the first ones that come to mind is John Candy, because his voice is just so unique. And it's, you know, he's no longer with us, and it hasn't been for a while, but it's the fact where that voice just stands out like a sore thumb. But as soon as you hear him, or that character up in his mouth up, you're like, that's freaking John Candy. Yeah. Go ahead, buddy.
That was my reaction. Willie and I were sitting in Orndorff Auditorium at IUP, and as soon as the Den of Earth started, we both looked, it's John Candy. Knew right away.
No, go ahead.
Kate. What do you want to talk about on this? You have something you want to talk about the movie? Did you like the movie at all? You saw it as a kid, right?
Yeah, but you know how to try to watch it again, and I got, even before this, I tried to watch the beginning of it, and it got through, like, you know, I won't even say half of it, but about the first 30, 40 minutes of it, just to kind of refresh my memory. It was kind of weird that in the first episode, if you call it, that looked like a tune after tune after tune after tune. The one with Harry Canyon as the cab driver.
Yeah.
You know Harry Canyon. Sounds like a porn name. But it's one of those things where there's all kind of songs like back to back to back. And as I research the soundtrack, yeah, it doesn't really go in any specific order. But you hear songs and then you hear, you know, tunes you've heard before. And then there's tunes I don't remember at all in this movie. But Once you get to the second, the one with John Candy, there's like the music just goes away. It seems like
it comes back on the one where there's another one with John Candy where he plays the robot.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of music. Yeah, that's where Cheap Trick I believe is in there, and that's super fun.
There's seven songs just in one section.
Yeah, so. And then the one with Captain. Hanover Fist.
Yeah.
There's music in that, and then the one with the Don Felder song with the B-29s, which is like a horror story. You know, that's got that song in it. But yeah, the one with the Den of Earth has more of a like an orchestral kind of.
Well, there is
soundtrack.
There are two soundtracks. There is a complete score soundtrack, and then there's the one we're talking about soundtrack.
Okay.
So they do have a complete. Different soundtrack with just the score of the movie.
Okay. So you're right, Keith. On the Den of Earth story, there isn't any rock tunes.
I love that in the next segment, which is the one with Hanover Fist, when the guy's being like brought up on all his charges and he has the scroll, and the guy, whoever's reading it, that's Dean Wormer. Whoever the guy who played Dean Wormer is, we'd have to ask our lovely intelligent audience
John
who
Vernon
that is.
Or John Vernon or something like that. I think
I was just waiting for him to go like this. I was waiting for him to read the charge as 0.0, but he didn't. But you see another one that just has that voice. You're like, that's Dean Wormer from Animal House. Whatever his name is, whoever guesses it gets a nothing, but just guess it anyway.
And one moving violation. I've seen it a million times. I love the movie. But go ahead.
There is a second movie as well, Heavy Metal 2000. It was obviously released in 2000, but it was awful. The movie was awful, but it does have a good soundtrack. Includes Billy Idol and some of that sort of stuff. But we're gonna focus
What they missed out on with the second movie? Did you ever say it? Did you ever try to watch it? The
sequel. I never watched that one, man. So if you're gonna don't talk about it.
Like they missed out what made the original charming.
Yeah.
Which was all the great. Voice acting and the humor. There's like it's completely humorless.
It's more sci-fi.
It's a total sci-fi. Like it takes itself very seriously. And I watched it. I'm like, oh, it was like a missed opportunity. Like it was all exciting. Like, oh, this is gonna be great. And because it, you know, but it just, I don't think it's good.
Yeah, everybody super anticipated that when it came out. How exciting it was, and we all did like a movie viewing party. And it was like, oh, I just needed to go home now.
I've never seen that, so yeah, I'm not going to watch it now.
No. Just skip it. You're not missing it. You're not missing anything. Yeah. It's a waste of an hour and a half or 2 hours, or whatever. So let's get into some of the bands then. We cool with that?
Yeah. Do track listing?
Yeah.
All right. Well, what I thought was the theme song for the movie, which is not, is Heavy Metal Sammy Hagar's version. Also has been dubbed Lily Six's theme song since like 10 years ago by a friend. Hagar wrote the song with Jim Peterik, who was a member of the band Survivor at the time. And Hagar had just signed with Geffen Records, whose executive, John Kolodner, I always want to say that wrong, has signed Survivor and deployed Peterik to help 38 Special write songs. And Kolodner arranged the writing session between Hagar and Peterik, which took place in San Francisco. They actually had trouble coming up with ideas, but Hagar remembered that his manager had mentioned that a heavy metal movie was coming out, and they need writers for songs for the movie.
Oh, so they weren't commissioned to strictly write for that movie.
No.
They were just getting together to start writing.
Yeah, they were just throwing ideas together.
Now, let me ask you a question. Is this Sammy Hagar's first solo song?
That I don't know.
Because I seem to, my mind is always like, because he was in Montrose, and he left Montrose, and then he wasn't in Van Halen, of course.
Right.
So I was always kind of figured that this was the first song. It's like Sammy Hagar's solo song that I remember. So anybody out there who's watching live, if you have any info on that, let us know. I'm curious about that. Go ahead.
The idea came from two metalheads attending a rock show. They came up with riffs and lyrics based on those moments of anticipation when waiting for the band to come on stage.
I think it absolutely captures that.
Yeah. And this is from the section of the movie that's my favorite, which is entitled So Beautiful and So Dangerous, with the two kids. Well, I guess they're not kids, but, you know, they wreck the spaceship and the whole thing. So, yeah, that's my favorite part. But it's a great song. I love the song.
Yeah, you want to talk about Sammy Hagar or this song at all, Keith? You have any ideas on
I'm going to say that this is probably, his first solo hit. I'm just going to guess. This is definitely pre I Can't Drive 55 shit. So.
It sounds right that it would be the first.
If it's not, it's got to be one of his first ones. It's a song that I knew not from the soundtrack. So you're saying that it was written for the soundtrack?
It was written for the soundtrack because they were trying to come up with a song. They saw that the movie needed a song. So, yeah, basically it was written for the soundtrack.
I think it's a song that you hear on classic rock radio still to this day. I mean, I've heard it many, many times. That's a song that I really don't associate with the movie. That's my only problem with the soundtrack, even though it has a lot of eclectic bands and a lot of good bands and bands you there are household names. It also has some bands I've never heard of before. And it's just one of them songs where I think it's just probably is one of the more standout tracks on the album. But, you know, it's Sammy Hagar, so it's usually... He puts out good shit,
it's balls out. Like, I mean, the other thing, and I know, just want to, because Lily and I were talking a little bit before the podcast. Like, you know, there's maybe only one or two songs on here that maybe we might consider actually heavy metal.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's called heavy metal because of the series, because of the graphic novel the magazine, because that's what it was called. you know, we're going to be talking about some artists on here, and please, you know, you young folks out there, I mean, that's not metal. No, we know it's not. Okay, but that's what the.
Don't forget, this was from like 40 years ago.
Yeah, this is from 1981. I think this is
one of the true like heavy rock songs on the record, and of course, you know, the only ones that would stand out to me that would be really true metal, if you will, would be that, and obviously Open Arms by Journey. I mean, that's a closed book.
So what do you got? What do you got next, Lily?
So the next song, is Heartbeat by Riggs. Jerry Riggs, who nobody, well, not nobody, but some people might not know who it is. He was formerly of Pat Travers and the band Lynx, who I didn't know who they were, but now he's a lead guitarist for 38 Special, so he's still prominent in the music scene. They have a very 38 Special sound, Riggs. So I think they sound great. I think they got lost in the shuffle because there were too many bands like that at the time. And this was the band's big break to have not one but two songs on the soundtrack. This one is the first. Came after Irving Azoff offered the band a contract with his Full Moon record label. They were excited to work with Roy Thomas Baker, who is the producer of the album.
Cool.
Who we talked about last week on the podcast.
Yes.
Working
yes.
in Hollywood.
Yes, I like the connection.
You like my segue.
Yeah.
working in Hollywood with the biggest producer at the time was sort of a big thing for a band who's not really known. It's a very rocking song, and like I said, it sounds much like Survivor and 38 Special.
And what was the other song that Riggs has on? Let's just talk real quick while we're talking about Riggs.
Radar Rider.
It's all about the Riggs, man. It's all about the Riggs right now.
Radar what?
Radar Rider.
Radar Rider.
Second song by Riggs on the album. This song was actually replaced Don Felder's Heavy Metal as the first song in the movie. For some reason, they said it was like a great launch pad for the beginning of the movie, which it fits into the sequence that's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's in the beginning.
So
with
yeah,
the Corvette. Yeah. That's a crazy scene in the beginning. Yeah, with the yeah. Corvette.
So
yeah.
I think it's great. I didn't have any history on the song other than that, but it is a good song. So,
so
I had that in my notes. It is the very first song in the movie. So there you go. That's I didn't know what the song was. I didn't know what the hell Riggs was. I mean, so it, but it's the song that, you know, it's got that. Go ahead, yeah. Kind of rock anthem kind of vibe. So yeah, it's a good energy song that starts off the movie, and that's about all I know about Rick.
Did you see the movie when you were young or not? You just
oh yeah, I told you in the thing that well, my mom.
I know
mom
we talked about it amongst ourselves, but it's a podcast, and we're trying to like share interesting stuff with the audience. He's like,
I thought maybe you knew the answer. You were trying to trick me or something. Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah,
to talk about it.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, fuck, what do you want me to tell you? I've seen it, and I got busted watching it, and my mom flipped out because it was animated tits in it. What are you going to do?
And then the
very next Friday, I'm watching Skinamax. She busted me with that, too, with real tits. So it's all about tits now.
Not just tits, dude. That's full frontal everything in yeah. that movie. I mean, there's some giant wang in that movie, too, dude. There's like, you know.
Lou, I don't really need, I'm not into that shit. I'm not even trying to look, I look away. I mean, if that's your thing, I'm not gonna fault
you. Did you avert your eyes?
And nowadays, everybody does what they want. So if you want to be that kind of guy, I mean, do what you got to do. But I didn't remember those parts. Sorry.
I could never get a chick like this back on Earth.
Well, I didn't see the movie till about 16 years after it came out because, again, I was born after it came out.
I'll tell my story about it here in a minute, but let's pick another band first.
The next one on the list is Working in a Coal Mine, the Devo version. It is a cover of an old R&B song written by Alan Toussaint. And
Toussaint, New Orleans' own Alan Toussaint.
Right.
There it is. And originally recorded by Lee Dorsey in 1966. It has been re-recorded by several musicians, but in this case, Devo. It was included as a bonus 7-inch single package with their album New Traditionalists. This version was later included on the soundtrack. And for this, also Employee of the Month, it entered Billboard September 5th, 1981, reaching number 43, and was also a top 10 single in New Zealand. It was used for the theme. Oh my gosh, it was used as a theme for the show Working. But what's cool about Devo in this movie is Devo's space age doppelgangers are in the space age saloon playing the song, through being cool.
Yeah, why is that not on the soundtrack?
It did not make it. For some reason, they preferred this one on the soundtrack to the other one.
Because
and a lot of people argue that point.
Because I like listen to that and I'm going like, and that came, and I was like, because I listened to the soundtrack like three times this week, and I was going like, no, it's We're Through Being Cool. It's not Working in a Coal Mine.
Right.
And it's in the Tarna. It's like the last story in the, and they go into the bar and it's Devo playing.
There they are. Up there.
Yeah. They're cartoon characters. And I think they're the only ones who are cartoon characters in the movie.
Yeah, I believe so too.
Yeah, but Through Being Cool is a great song too.
A lot of people argue why that one didn't make it. There's no real reason. They just preferred this one to be
in it. So what you'd have to do then if you wanted the true heavy metal soundtrack is you'd have to make your own compilation CD and not put on Working on a Coal Mine. Put in We're Through Being Cool.
Yes.
If you guys don't know We're Through Being Cool, after the podcast, go back and listen to it and check it out. You want to talk about Devo for a second or Alan Toussaint?
I mean, the Devo song is like other Devo songs. When they do a cover, they do it like Devo. I mean, it's much like, you know, Satisfaction and like whatever other covers they do. And they're known for Whip It and songs like that. But when they do a cover, they put their stamp on it. I'm not usually a fan of bands that do their version of the song, but if you're going to do it up, then do it right like Devo and make it your own version. That's great, man. I mean, it's just, it's a band that just goes to show you that just, they're not afraid to take chances and do their thing.
Yeah. They can make keyboards sound rocking, too. That's a
that guy played a guitar in that band, I think.
Yeah, he does play a guitar in it.
What a jackass.
He sucks.
Who said?
That Screw was okay. those guys. Hell with those guys.
Fucking cool.
What's next, Lily?
Veteran of the Psychic Wars by Blue Oyster Cult is the next song on the album. The song first appeared in the 1981 album Fire of an Unknown
That's
Origin.
Right. Great album.
An extended live version appears on the 1982 album Extraterrestrial Live, and it also appears on this soundtrack. The phrase Veteran of a Thousand Psychic Wars is from the Hawkwind song Standing at the Edge from the album Warrior on the Edge of Time in 1975. Which also dealt with the myth of the Eternal Champion and the contained lyrics written by Moorcock. Prior to that, it has appeared as a line in the poem Far Arden by Jim Morrison of The Doors.
Yeah, this is my absolute favorite BOC song. It's one of my favorite like classic rock tunes as well. I love those, those drums. It's very epic sounding.
A lot of effects on a lot of the drums in these, which goes to show you there's definitely an 80s film.
Yeah.
This song fits the movie to a T, though I'm not a big BOC fan. A lot of their music's like a fucking ice pick in my ear, but yeah, this one's tolerable.
I love the band. I love the album Fire of Unknown Origin as well. I like the song Fire of Unknown Origin. And the most famous song on that album is Burning for You, which was a big radio rock radio hit for them. Veteran of Psychic Wars, I love the sort of idea of the song. I've partied to this song a lot, and it's one of those things when you party and you listen to certain music, you start to kind of get the story of the song kind of in your head, or maybe you make up your own story about it, but just this idea that, you know, it's a psychic war, and, you know, they've been eating out our brains. It's like, you know, oh, please don't let these shakes go on. It's a, you know, these guys are like wiped out from this kind of like sort. It made me kind of think of the movie Scanners. You ever seen that movie?
It's been a minute, but yeah.
Where they use psychic powers and they can blow each other's brains up.
Yeah.
That was like the first thing I thought of when I heard that song. But I absolutely freaking love that song. What are you doing, Hawk?
I'm just getting a drink, man. That's all.
Well, also, this song has actually been covered by Finnish metal band Tero, as well as Metallica at the Bridge School benefit.
I would love to hear Metallica do it.
I listened to it earlier. It was pretty good.
Is it pretty good? I'm going to have to try.
And we know I don't love Metallica. So.
Blue. Oi.
Oyster cult.
Oi.
No, I don't have any blue oyster cult.
Not the blue oyster cole. Friggin' 21 pairs last time I checked. I was this close to working the 7-Eleven, you know.
Thank you.
And most famously, Blue Oyster Cult's known for more cowbell.
Hey, whoa. Did you call me a scalper?
Scalper?
We'll do a podcast on Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
We should.
We're actually switching gears and doing it right now.
Oh, okay.
I mean, Nancy Wilson is in the movie.
So what do you got next?
Reach Out by Cheap Trick.
Oh, I love this song.
Released in 1981 as part of the soundtrack. It was written by Bob James and Pete Kamita and produced by Roy Thomas Baker. Although the film soundtrack album reached number 12 on the Billboard, Reach Out was not a commercial success and failed to make a chart appearance. The single is only a release from Cheap Trick to feature Pete Kamita as a bassist. And I can't read anymore. Kamita has replaced original bassist Tom Peterson in 1980. Reach Out was released before the soundtrack album, so I lied. Because that totally contradicts what I just said. At the time, Billboard reported some of the soundtrack would be released as a single on the artist's own label and others on Full Moon / Asylum.
I think this is a really good, typical kind of Cheap Trick. Very catchy.
Yeah.
Big chorus. Great. Robin Zander. I mean, he's freaking crushing it vocally. And it should have been a hit.
It should have charted.
Yes. I mean, and it's very distinct. As soon as it comes on, you know it's Cheap Trick. I was watching the movie one time, and Stu came into the room. He's like, "Is that Cheap Trick?" You know, he wasn't paying attention to me. But he's like, "It sounds just like Robin Zander." I'm like, "Yeah, it's Cheap Trick."
Do you want me to do the other Cheap Trick song, too?
Yeah, what's the other Cheap Trick song?
The other Cheap Trick song on the album is I Must Be Dreamin'. Again, this one is in my favorite section of the movie, So Beautiful and So Dangerous. I'm actually only familiar with the song because of the film. It is the second Cheap Trick song on the album. It's very synth-heavy, but that makes it fit, I think, into the whole sci-fi film fantasy thing. I think it could have a little more guitar to synth, but that's why it works. It's about him wanting to reject a girl, and it seems like he is until the lyrics states that he's going down for the count. He's falling again. He can't help himself because women are poisonous and toxic.
Yeah, you all are, bitches.
He doesn't want to love her, but he can't help himself. So,
yeah.
And he never does say that I must be dreaming. He always says you must be dreaming.
So, Keith, you want to talk about Cheap Trick for a minute and their appearance in heavy metal?
I'm glad they got two songs on the soundtrack. That's nice because you know why? Because I think Cheap Trick is a criminally underrated band.
Yeah. Thank you.
When I heard that I Must Be Dreaming and what's the other one?
Reach Out.
That's the one, yeah. Definitely soaring vocals by Xander. And then I Must Be Dreaming has that like cool kind of like snare shots of the great Bunny Carlos. No one gives enough credit to the great Bunny Carlos. But yeah, those guys, and Rick Nielsen's always a very tasteful player. It's one of those bands that just kind of doesn't get the credit they deserve, and they have a ton of hits, but they kind of always get that B-list kind of shit, mm-hmm. which is, that's a shame, but I mean, that's just kind of the way it is with people. It's kind of hard to, like, you know, deny their body of work, but I mean, it just goes to show you that, you know, that this soundtrack has good taste.
I just got inspired by what you were saying, by what both of you are saying, that I think we should do a podcast, maybe we should do this next week, Cheap Trick versus the Cars.
Huh. We haven't done a versus in a minute.
And those are two bands that are kind of like, you know, good guitar music, but still got that new wave kind of thing. And the similar types of songs in a sense that it's uber catchy, but still got the rock audience, you know, revved up. So, just put
I was actually going to make a like recommendation for like 1980 through 1985 or 6, where rock music was starting to take a new shape for itself with the new wave kind of stuff. I'm talking even like some of the stuff out of CBGB was coming out, like Blondie and Talking Heads, who were the best crop of those bands. Because there was a lot of new bands coming out, even bands that, you know, it was oddly enough, I mean, you even had like later in the 80s and mid to late 80s, you had bands like REM who would stay around forever. You know, it was just like there's bands like that that were at that kind of forefront of what I would consider new wave and then slash alternative music. You can put U2 in that, you know, that kind of category where they were ahead. They were that forefront of that that 80s met or 80s rock scene, and it was bands that probably came and went that have great players and like Missing Persons. I mean, there's a lot of bands that are at that forefront of that 80s style where it was not quite recognizable yet. But yeah, the Cars and Cheap Trick, and you know, there's a lot of bands that were doing something different. But that's something we can talk about.
Well, what's cool about the Cars and Cheap Trick is these guys, they're actually 70s bands. And and so they bring out, so they were able to ride kind of like both waves, you know what I mean? Great music, man. I can't say enough about Cheap Trick. I could do a whole podcast on Cheap Trick.
I love watching Cheap Trick live. Like, they're so entertaining to watch on the stage. I just, like, you can't keep your eyes off.
I mean, I think that was something, too, that bands thought about then. They were like, well, you know, we got to put on a show. And then you cultivate that. Keith and I are both musicians. You know this. You cultivate that in the clubs because you go like, oh, no, okay. So we don't have the budget to do, like, a Kansas or Genesis show with major, you know, boom, pyrotechnics and lasers and stuff, or Pink Floyd type thing. So what can we do in a club to get people to notice us and have fun and everything? So we got a guy in a bow tie, plays a checkered guitar, and you know what I mean? And then, you know, but even Bunny, you mentioned Bunny Carlos, he cultivated a whole kind of vibe with the sort of, like, he kind of looked like the, you know, the drunk guy at the bar after work.
Yeah,
you know,
he looks like your chemistry teacher.
Yeah,
the chain smokes.
He reminds me of, like, either Norm or Cliff on Cheers or something like that.
Yeah,
you'd be
right.
Like, you'd walk into Cheers and Bunny Carlos would be sitting there, you know, hey, Bunny.
Having a
and
beer.
He'd be like, he'd just be hanging out, having a drink.
He'd just be sitting there playing a cherry machine with a friggin' ash, like, just falling off his cigarette. You know, that's the kind of dude that Bunny Carlos is.
But, yeah. But he's not in the band anymore, right?
No, I don't think Rick Nielsen's son plays drums. No, I don't think Bunny is
retired,
not that young, man. He looked older. He looked 50 when they were 20. You know what I mean?
Know.
It's like, it's one of them guys that just, you know, it's just, he always looked older than the rest of the band. Just like Tico Torres from Bon Jovi. I think he's probably one of their uncles, and just they just kind of were like, oh, shit, he can play a 2 and 4. Let's put him in the band. And he was in the band forever.
Oh, that's like the movie.
That kind of thing. It's where some people just don't age gracefully. You know what I mean? It's what it is. I mean, I count another gray hair every day. So it's just, it's the way we're all falling apart, man. I don't think Bunny Carlos got from what I read somewhere, he didn't get a real fair shake, but I just don't think that it was kind of like the Joey Kramer thing where I don't know what kind of playing shape he was in, man. So
legit.
Not a young dude. I'm not even sure of his age, but he always looked older than the rest of them.
Yeah, or he could have just been in, like, you know, he just been an alcoholic or something.
or some people just don't want that kind of lifestyle anymore either. I mean,
they're done. It's like Vito Bratta. It was like, it was amazing, highly influential guitar player. Everybody wanted to play like him. And he's just like, no, I'm done. I don't play anymore. I'm just done. We were like, well, can't you get White Lion back together? And he's like, no. Don't you want to go out and be on a stage? No, I just don't. I'm done. There are people like that. It was like, you know, this was a phase of my life and I had a good time doing it. But now I'm doing something else. What do you got next?
Heavy Metal, Taking a Ride.
Oh,
Don
yeah,
Felder.
Baby.
So this is considered to be like the song on the album. Title song, written by Don Felder with backing vocals from Timothy Schmidt and Don Henley. Like I said, not to be confused with the Sammy Hagar version. The B-side All of You is also a track on the movie soundtrack album. It is Felder's only solo chart hit, like Lou said earlier. It charted in the U.S., reaching number 43. Personally, I prefer Sammy Hagar's version, but that's just me.
I love it. I think Don Fingers Felder is a guitar player that people have kind of forgotten about. Like, just don't realize what an amazing musician he is. He's a good singer. He's no Don Henley. I mean,
right.
Don Henley is, like, you know, that's like in the top 10 greatest classic rock voices of all time. But he's a very, very good singer.
He's singing on this track, right?
Yeah, he's a singer on this track. He's one of the things I like about the song. I love the fact that it's kind of a rock disco song.
Yeah.
You could dance to it. Like, if this came on, you know, at that time in a disco, you know,
you'd be dancing.
People would get up and dance to it. It has that kind of, like, boom, 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 ba da 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 da. It has that pulse. So I think it's really, fun. There's just something about it that just captured my attention when it came out. I don't know. I just liked it.
And there it is. There,
and boom goes the dynamite.
Do you want me to do the other Don Felder song too?
Yeah, quick hit on that, and I'm going to tell my story about my first time seeing this movie.
Okay. All of You is the other Don Felder song, like I mentioned. It's a great rock ballad, some cool funky bass. You can always use a ballad on an album. There's two on here, I believe. It has a bluesy, trippy, sexy feel. I kind of feel like I would be making out with my boyfriend in the living room while watching this section of the movie because it's a sexy song.
Oh, my.
But he just wants all of who he is singing about, basically.
So here's what happened.
Okay.
This movie came out in 1981, and my parents were like, no. You're not going to see that. You know, we tried everything. Like, but mom, it's a cartoon. And apparently my mom was hip and was like, no.
She's not dumb.
No, we're not. You're not going to that. And then other stuff happened and I kind of just forgot about the movie because it wasn't like a big hit movie.
Right.
But, you know, it kind of came and went. And then I sort of forgot about it. And a few years later, I was in college and my buddy, Willie Franklin. You know Willie Franklin, Keith?
Of course. Yeah. Okay. Bass player extraordinaire.
Yeah. Probably one of the greatest musicians in the Pittsburgh area. But he and I were in jazz band together, and he said, "Hey, Lou, do you want to go see heavy metal? It's playing at the Orndorff Auditorium tonight, like at 10 o'clock." And he says, "I heard it's a dirty cartoon with good music."
He was not wrong.
And I was like, "Shit!" I'm like, "Willie, I always wanted to see the movie, and I never got a chance to see it. So, okay, well, let's go." And so imagine this, dude. It's a small auditorium on campus, packed. I mean, we sat at the very back, and every seat was packed. And they blasted the soundtrack. They cranked it like you were at a concert. And it was a bunch of drunk college kids.
That'd
and any time there was nudity or somebody made a dirty joke or there was sex, it was like, woo, yeah, it was a total blast.
Chaos.
Yeah, it was a total blast seeing this movie. Like, I mean, that's probably why, like, I have such an affection for the film, because it was just a really fun experience.
It's a nice memory.
Yeah, it's a great memory. And, but it was just super. We went out there. Then we hit the bars.
Of course.
Afterwards. And became one of the drunk college kids.
And there it is.
Yeah, it's just a great memory. But it's that kind of movie, and I did not expect it to be funny. Like, what? There was so much humor, and I was like blown away. And then again, like I said, the great voices that I had grown, you know, had heard in millions of movies. So, do you have any other comments about Don Felder or anything, Keith? Before you go to the next artist.
That's one song that I actually went back and listened to the soundtrack that I remember from the movie without actually having to watch it again. It's just a movie that stands out. It got a little hook to it. It does have a nice driving, you know, danceable rhythm to it. But I really just didn't know that he was, and he's a good singer. He's better than I thought he would be. I mean, that's not what I pay attention. Yeah, that's why I had to ask if that's him on the old vocals there. But yeah, he's probably an underappreciated guitar player, obviously. But yeah, it's a good song, and I think that it, like, isn't that the it played during the part where one of the chicks riding a big ass bird.
Yeah,
no.
It's not.
No. Heavy metal.
Oh, that, the other song.
Yeah, heavy metal is played during the B-29s with the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a great. And Felder wrote what's the Eagle song that he wrote? These shoes, is it called These Shoes, Them Shoes, Those Shoes?
I don't know. What you
got? These Shoes?
Yeah.
It was after Robert De Niro's the song, These Shoes?
Yeah, he
you
wrote.
Talk about These Shoes?
Yeah, we'll talk about These Shoes right here. He wrote that and wanted to sing it, and it caused a lot of division in the band. Don Henley ended up singing it. But anyways, I digress. So what do you got next?
Next is True Companion by Donald Fagen of Steely Dan. Steely Dan's breakup was officially announced on June 17th, 1981, when Donald Fagen gave a scoop to the New York Times that he didn't rule out the possibility that he would one day reunite with Steely Dan, co-leader, co-songwriter, blah, 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 but neglected to mention that he already returned to the studio as a solo artist, so he was working on this. The song was his 80s debut. Many people think it was actually The Nightfly. That is not true. This precedes that song. Fagan used the song as an excuse to get back into the studio after a few years off. Lyrically, the song seems to be a Dark Star-esque meditation of people on a spaceship.
It has a great guitar solo on it. Did you find out who plays the guitar on that?
I did not.
Okay. Because I thought it was Walter Becker from Steely Dan. I was like, this might as well be a Steely Dan song.
It sounds... Well, there's chords that are played on keyboard that I always call the Steely Dan chords.
Yeah.
And that song takes, what... I mean, if I'm listening to the right version, three and a half minutes before the vocals even come in.
Yeah, it's almost all instrumental.
But it's straight up Steely Dan. As soon as you start playing those Donald Fagen Steely Dan chords, you know who the hell it is. You don't have to even hear the vocals.
There's a whole article about this song on movingtheriver.com. That's it, right there.
Oh, that is. I'm just kind of curious as to who because the guitar solo on it is just.
It's probably just an incredible player. It's Steely Dan, or at least the lead vocalist of it. He's not going to play with a bunch of hacks, you know what I mean? You're not going to go to the fucking Mousetrap jam night and grab a bunch of dudes that are playing out on stage and have them record with Donald Fagen. He's got the cream of the crop. I mean, so whoever played is probably a killer.
Wilt Lee's on bass, Steve Jordan, and Don Grohl. I think Don Grohlnick is on it, is the I believe. You know, when I heard it, I'm like, okay, this is one of those guys. This is Dean Parks or Ray Parker Jr. or one of those, like, you know, guys that were floating around the studio in L.A. at that time. But it does have a great guitar solo. And speaking of Donald Fagen solo songs, there's another, he did another song for a movie around this same time. FM, no static at all. You know, No Static FM by Donald Fagen? That's a great song. Mm-mm. You know that song, right, Keith?
Yeah, I thought it was Steely Dan song.
I believe it's a Donald Fagen song.
Oh, it's on Steely Dan's Greatest Hits, Lou.
Maybe it is. Okay, then I'm off.
If it's on Steely Dan's Greatest Hits, I think you got the conch.
Maybe I'm off.
I'm just saying, if it's on your Greatest Hits, it's not the Donald Fagen solo project.
Maybe
it's Steely Dan project.
Okay, go ahead. Lily, give us the next thing, and I'm gonna. I'm curious now because in my mind, I always thought it was.
This is what happens. You start thinking, and then you have to.
I know. Thought it's dangerous.
The next song is "Crazy: A Suitable Case for Treatment" by Nazareth. Not much history behind the song. It is in my favorite section of the movie that I talked about before. So beautiful and so
dangerous.
You're
right, Keith. It is a Steely Dan song. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think this is a super underrated song. It wasn't one of Nazareth's hits, but I really love the song, and it didn't. It didn't even appear on an album of theirs until 2010 when they remastered The Full Circle. But it's pretty sleazy. They don't typically come off sleazy, but it's a pretty sleazy song.
What's the singer's name? He's got an amazing...
Remember his name.
Very distinctive voice. And when that kicks in, you're like,
Oh, that's definitely Nazareth.
Yeah, you can tell immediately that it's them, so...
But this one is very sleaze rock, and you know that's why I like it.
Lily, what are you trying to say?
I like sleaze rock.
Any comments on Nazareth or the song, Keith?
Actually, I listened to the song, and it just kind of sat there.
You didn't do anything for you?
But I just went on living my life. I don't know. It's another band that's like BOC that's like a fucking ice pick to my ear at times.
I don't really dig them, huh?
I'm about to hear Love Hurts one more time. I'm going to have to kill myself. It's just one of them songs I've never heard before, and I hope I never hear again. But then again, what do I know?
Hair of the dog. Let's move on. What's next? Lily?
Open Arms by Journey, which is one of the bigger songs on the album. It was also on Journey's album Escape in 1981, co-written by Steve Perry and Jonathan Cain. This is about a drifting relationship. I'm pretty sure we've talked about this song before. Most recognizable radio hits, biggest Billboard hit, behind Centerfold by Jay Giles and I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett. Been covered by just about everybody. Mariah Carey, even. God help us.
Wow, Mariah Carey and Open Arms.
It has been dubbed as one of rock's most beautiful ballads. That's basically all I can
pretty
say
much
on it.
I like the fact, I remember hearing the song, and that and Faithfully, the things I liked about those songs was that, yes, it's a love ballad, but there's some like crunchy guitar in it. Neil Schon, man, it's like, he's bringing it out, man. You could tell Neil's like, wait a minute, we could do these ballad things, but there's got to be some, like, guitar shit going on.
I mean, that was the compromise. I mean, it's a song that, you know, when you're going to have a love-making, we'll just say it for the kids out there. When you have a love-making scene in a movie, throw a Journey tune in, and probably this one. I mean, it's been in a bunch of movies, and it's probably one of the biggest rock power ballads of all time. And it's just it's kind of a little weird for this movie, but it's it works. I mean, it's.
And Keith, you're right. An FM No Static at All is a Steely Dan song. My bad.
And Dan McCafferty is the lead singer of Nazareth.
Dan McCafferty. Not to be confused with John Caffrey from the Beaver Brown
McCafferty.
Band.
Right. Yes.
You could get to play at your backyard barbecue for $3,000.
On the dark side.
They'll do that and then they go, good night, see ya.
No, there was another song, something years. Wonder Years or Open Years or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
and,
I remember,
and I remember they had Golden Years or something like that.
It just sounded like a bad Bruce Springsteen impression.
It sounded like a slow like one of Springsteen's, like a bad ballad, like a Springsteen ballad that like wasn't good enough to be on any album. It's like on a demo in his, drawer.
Like
his
Tender Years, actually.
Tender Years.
But my mind sometimes works, man. And then sometimes it just goes away.
Well, like I said, I thought that FM was a Donald Fagen song. It's a Steely Dan song. What do you got next?
Queen Bee by Grand Funk Railroad. Originally released on the 1981 Grand Funk Lives. That was their first album since disbanding in 1976. This track was featured in the film during, again, the So Beautiful and So Dangerous section, my favorite. It's about a man wanting the chick, a.k.a. the Queen Bee, the girl that everybody wants. He wants to take her away, blah, blah, blah. I do not like this song. This is the only song I don't like on the album. I don't think it fits. I'm not the producer, so what the hell do I know?
All right. I listened to the song a couple times this week because listen to the album. I think it's a cool rock tune, I guess. I kind of like, okay, you said Nazareth and BOC or what those bands that like, Grand Funk Railroad, or maybe this is Blasphemy, is one of those bands that's just kind of eh. I know that they were a real force to be reckoned with in the 70s, played, stadiums and everything like that. But when I hear, and I know Mark Farner's a cool guitar player and good voice and a song, they wrote Some Kind of Wonderful, all it just never really reached me. I don't know why. I should like them, but it just doesn't do anything for me. You have any thoughts on the Grand Funk Railroad?
I'm actually going to have to probably agree with you 150,000% on this. I mean, Grand Funk Railroad, I mean, other than the introduction and the drum intro to a Word American Band, which was is cool. This song has a lot of affected out drums, like a lot of these tunes on a record do. It's the 80s. What are you going to do? It's a song that I wasn't familiar with, and Grand Funk Railroad is, one of them bands that I just don't really have a lot of knowledge of because I just don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's like, it's okay. I know there's people that like absolutely love them.
Brewer grows a great afro, though. I mean, that dude, his shit was up here. I mean, it was like Welcome Back Cotter for a while. I mean, it was like Welcome Back Brewer. And it was like 6 inches high. Like, Kid and Play would not have the high hair that high.
See, I like Grand Funk. I just don't like this song. I just think it's incredibly boring.
It's probably like a throwaway track. You know what I mean? It's one of them songs that didn't fit on one of their albums. Like, hey, even the Donald Fagen song, as much as I love Billy Van, you all know. It sounded like something that was on should have been on Asia, but they just didn't make the cut.
Yeah, I kind of thought that too about True Companion. Like, and again, I love Donald Fagen, I love Steely Dan, but I was kind of like, with it being so instrumental,
why did it take so long to get? Did he forget where he was at in the song? They were like Donald, we pushed play like 3 minutes ago.
Like, this was something that like they put together, and let's do a lot of jamming, and then I'll do a little vocal thing here, and then we'll wrap it up, and like maybe kind of an experimental sort of thing. It's cool because of who it is and what it is, but it isn't like it wouldn't be a standout Steely Dan track by any means. What's like? We got to be toward the end here, right?
Yeah, we got three more. The Mob Rules by Black Sabbath.
Oh, yeah, great song.
One of course the songs that makes it heavy metal, I think. This is not Ozzy Sabbath, this is Dio Sabbath.
Which makes it way cooler.
Which makes it fit perfectly into the film's theme because Dio is all about the fantasy themes. Was obviously released on album Mob Rules in 1981. The album was actually confusing for all band members because they were going from satanic themes to fantasy themes, which they're known for the satanic themes. The song was about how people ignore their individuality and their own personal beliefs when they are in the mob and still go for the mob mentality. And they can't think for themselves.
Maybe people should listen to this song now.
Thank you.
I just have that in my notes. See, great minds think alike. I said this song would be right up there with what's going on today with all the BS going on. But I think this is probably you know, it's a song that I knew, obviously, other than the soundtrack. It's probably, for me, if I don't know if we have time to rank them, it's the best song on the soundtrack.
It might be. I might say number one on that too. I mean, like, it's definitely in the top three for me. Mm-hmm. I think
it's just a kick ass song. I'm not as big as a Dio Sabbath fan as probably you are, but I like the Aussie Sabbath a little bit more. But it's just one of the Ronnie James Dio is and always will be a great vocalist. He's a great front man. From what all things are said about him, he was a great human being. And it's a great song, and Black Sabbath's a great metal band. And I think this is perfect for the album. And I think that if it was up to me, which it wasn't, I would have put more heavier acts on the, because the song, the, you know, the album or the movie is called Heavy Metals. I would have put more like hard edge bands on there. But yeah, this is to me the shining, the green orb of the
the Lochnar.
The album. The Lochnar of the album, where everybody wants that. The Mob Rules right there. So.
I love the album. I love the album, Mob Rules. In fact, a few months ago, I was on a playlist with it, and I played it over and over. It's just so cool to hear that era of Sabbath and kind of what they were doing and how Dio really influenced like everything about them. They became kind of a different band. It's kind of like Sammy Hagar in Van Halen versus David Lee Roth. Yeah. You know, they kind of became a different band.
Still
with,
good,
with Dio. Very good, but a different kind of Sabbath. I would love to talk about the song all day because I love Black Sabbath. But what do you got? What's next?
Prefabricated by Trust. If you do not know who this band is, they are a French hard rock band founded in 1977 and popular in Europe in the first half of the 1980s. What's great about this, Bon Voisin, who is the lead singer, sort of sounds a little bit like Bon Scott from AC/DC, but they do talk about a lot of political themes in their music. Nico McBrain and Clive Burr were both part of that band one point, but they are not part of the song. The vocals are meh. I don't really like the vocals on the song, but I do like the song in general. The lyrics do seem to be on theme with what Trust did with the political, very Big Brother-like, and that we are slaves to the commercial life.
What segment of the movie is this in?
This is in, I think it's in my section. Hold on, let me look.
We're talking Prefabricated?
Yes.
Prefabricated. Any thoughts on this?
That is in the section that I like.
I don't really have anything to say about it. I don't know the band.
I think the drum intro sounds like it's Cozy Powell on the drums, man. It sounds like someone like a rainbow kind of like that Cozy Powell kind of like, you know, double bass, real simple, but like cool, just tasteful playing that Cozy added to a lot of acts. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think it's Cozy on the track, but it's someone that sounds like him. But it's got that classic metal sound, man. I think did Metallica cover a Trust song somewhere along the line?
Probably.
Yeah, that was their shtick.
That band sounds familiar to me, just due to the fact it's like Diamond Head or some shit.
Yeah.
Where you were like, who the hell is Diamond Head? But you knew Metallica did M.I.E.
And there's one song, the only female.
The only female on the album, Blue Lamp by Stevie Nicks. Iconic voice, only female on the album, originally recorded for her solo album debut, Belladonna, but not used. It was actually about a blue Tiffany lamp that her mother gave her, and it became her favorite possession because of the way the light shined through. It would symbolize the light at the end of the tunnel for her and Lindsey Buckingham. I know, it was very sentimental. It was very important to her that the song found a place for itself. She's in love with the song. It was really the beginning of Belladonna because it was the first thing she ever recorded with other musicians, and it was the first time she'd ever recorded by standing in a room singing at the same time that five guys were playing, because Fleetwood Mac didn't do it that way.
Okay.
So, there it is.
Very cool. Any comments on this?
That's because Fleetwood Mac only had three guys. In, so. I mean, I'm just saying, if you're going to count the numbers, this is one of the most distinctive voices in rock history. The song does nothing for me, but it's Stevie Nicks, and, you know, she's the White Witch, and she's cool. I don't know, but it's just one of them songs that kind of just, I can see why I didn't make the cut, but it's a song. And, you know, like I said, it's another iconic voice. I'm not going to rag on it. It's not one of her better songs. What are you going to do?
She's got enough.
So, heavy metal, if you've never seen it, you can find it on streaming. Go check it out.
Good luck finding the album, though.
Yeah. Well, you can hear the songs if you watch the movie. You hear the correct songs, the correct Devo song.
Yes, the one that should have been on the album.
Yeah, yeah. So, so check that out. You know, if you haven't, if you've ever seen it, go, give it a listen. On this day, speaking of Black Sabbath, on this day, 1970, having recently changed their name from Earth to Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne, Tony Iommi, Geezer Butler, and Bill Ward made their concert debut at the Roundhouse in London as Black Sabbath. This day in 71, Led Zeppelin appeared at Leeds University, Leeds, England, during their Back to the Clubs tour. It was the first tour which saw Zeppelin performing Stairway to Heaven, Black Dog, and Gain, California. Keith, you'll like this. In this day in 1975, Telly Savalas, actor, was at number one on the UK singles chart with his version of David Gates, you know, from Bread, the song, If. So Telly Savalas sang If, you know, if a picture paints. Crazy, right? Who loves you, baby? Who loves you?
Long as it wasn't Bill Gates, we'll be all right.
On this day in 1987, U2 released their fifth studio album, The Joshua Tree. Classic. Perfect album, right, Keith? There's not a bad thing on The Joshua Tree.
Is that really their fifth album? I would have never guessed that. I thought it was their third album, actually.
Should I Stay or Should I Go gave The Clash their only UK number one single after the track was used for a Levi's TV advertisement. The track was first released in 82. From the album Combat Rock, which is a great... Everybody talks about London Calling, but I love Combat Rock. So that happened on this day in 1991. Brad Delp, in this day in 2007, Brad Delp, lead singer of the U.S. Rock band Boston, More Than a Feeling, Don't Look Back, Foreplay Long Time, committed suicide by carbon monoxide poisoning at his home in the New Hampshire town of Atkinson. He died from smoke of two charcoal grills he lit inside his sealed master bedroom. Wow. He was found by police lying on a pillow on his bathroom floor with a note paper clipped to his shirt, which read, "Mr. Brad Delp, I'm a lonely soul." Oh my God, I'm kind of getting all choked up there. Don't want to read this. On this day in 2010, Lil Wayne was sentenced to a year in prison.
Damn it.
All right, upbeat.
Okay, there's a couple birthdays. Not a lot of super famous people, but some super famous. Keith, you're a jazz guy. Ornette Coleman was born on this day in
1936.
The urban cowboy himself, Mickey Gilley.
I love that movie.
Come on down to Gilley's and ride the bull.
That's right. Robin Trower, or from Pittsburgh, Robin Trower. Robin Trower. Was born on this day in 1945. Chris Thompson, singer with Manfred Mann's Earth Band. Al, and not Ozzy Osbourne, but the other famous Osbourne, Jeffrey Osbourne. On the wings of love.
You cracked me up.
What about Anders Osbourne? You know that one.
Let me see. Anybody else we of note? Robert Sledge. Bassist of Ben Folds 5, very, very unique bass player, plays very some cool stuff with the distortion. So this is some birthdays that are happening, going on. Also on this day in 2012, 76-year-old Jerry Lee Lewis married for the seventh time when he wed his caregiver, Judith Brown. Lewis split from his sixth wife, Carrie McIver, in 2004. After 20 years of marriage, Brown, who was 14 years younger than Lewis, was previously married to the star's cousin, Rusty.
I mean, he likes them youngins, doesn't he?
I mean, the dude is what, you know, is he 115 at this point? And he's still the killer. He's still rolling, right? He's still alive, right?
Yep. He's still the killer, man.
And no offense, but he was the killer. I mean, I'm not trying to give nicknames to people, but he was the killer way before O.J. Simpson. So I'm just saying that's just the way that is.
Oh, any comments before we get out of here?
Everybody's saying how they haven't really seen the movie, but they know the soundtrack. That's what I'm getting a lot of.
So. Give the movie a try. I mean, you know, it's dated, but
it's fun.
It's just fun. Really fun. Don't go in thinking like you're going to be like, oh my God, it's the greatest movie in the world. It is not. You know,
totally worth a watch.
One of the first movies to use rotoscope technique as well. So, anyways, all right, Keith, what do you got going on that we can tell everybody about?
This Saturday, I'll be at the Babylon Club in Metairie, Louisiana. So, if you're in the Metairie, Louisiana area, come down. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, I've seen the movie a lot. I think it's the same Babylon Club that Scarface got shot up at.
Oh, nice.
It's not.
Yeah.
Damn. I was excited.
Say hello to my little friend.
That was probably Miami, huh?
It's the one where Richard Belzer was telling jokes at first.
Lily, anything to say?
I have my show Thursday's Hot Licks with Lily Six on Rock Rage Radio. You can get download the app for free or go to rockrageradio.com. I interviewed the band Heartsick this week. Also, Horrid Fest is coming up at the Subalpine in August.
Horrid Fest
in August.
Horror Fest. How much? What's going on there?
So stay tuned for the lineup announcement on that.
Speaking of announcements, Rockin' Pod 2021 is happening in Nashville, Tennessee, and hopefully, I know I will be there, and I will be presenting. Hopefully, with the Six and the Hawk will make an appearance as well. We need to talk about hotels and stuff this week, guys. If we're going to do that, I'm going. I don't know if you guys want to go, but it's
August first weekend.
It's like 4th and 5th or 3rd and 5th or 5th and 6th, something like that.
I'm going back to Pittsburgh the 7th and 8th because for a wedding, but I don't know if that's going to jive or not. We'll see.
Okay. If you guys are, there's going to be tons of great bands playing. Some famous people are going to show up and like do signings and stuff. People like Billy Sheehan, people like that of that ilk are going to be in there. It's a couple of days of, you know, people talking about music. You get to meet a lot of rockers. There's shows around the city that are part of the event as well. There's going to be a bus that's going to take you from the hotel into Nashville to the clubs to see the bands and things like that.
That's cool.
You're
going by yourself. Who's staying in your room?
I don't know. Me. You.
Me.
And there's going to be...
That's who.
There's going to be, and a lot of times what happens is super groups form, like spontaneously. Like last year, you had, Michael Sweet.
Yeah, Michael Sweet.
Yeah, just popped up and started jamming with other guys, you know. It was just really, a bunch of stuff like that happens. So it's super fun. I don't know what else to say. Oh, there's a lot of memorabilia. There's a lot of folks there peddling, you know, tons of rock memorabilia and old posters and magazines and stuff. So if you love rock, this is definitely something you definitely want to check out. So check that out. We'll give you more information as it comes up. Real quick, one more time, wolfscustoms.online. Thank you, guys. You guys are awesome. Rock Rage Radio. Go to rockrageradio.com. Download the app so you can listen to Lily V6's show on Thursdays. And go to lulombardimusic.com to get all things Ludini and Lou Lombardi. Hey, fun show tonight. High energy, everybody. We're all talking about it. It was a good time. If you haven't seen Heavy Metal, or if you haven't seen it in a long time, you can find it streaming. It's all out there. Guys, have a great week, and we'll catch you all in the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.